there's been a common thread that has run through your choices of projects to do, most recently A Man for All Seasons on stage, and other films of a religious nature. What attracted these to you to these films? Were they things that just came to you, or did you seek them out?
In the case of Man for All Seasons, I sought it out. I think it's the best play written in the last generation. I began doing it on the stage in the mid-60s, not long after it was first done, which was 1960. I've done 5 productions on the stage, most recently in London and some other English cities for a 5-month run last year and the year before. And then after I closed that run, we made a film of the play. I don't mean of the production. We made a movie and included in our cast for the film John Gielgud, Vanessa Redgrave, and Richard Johnson, which are pretty good inclusions. And I, as I said, that one I wanted as much to do as I've wanted to do the Shakespearean projects I've done and so forth. In the case of the only 2 other films I've done that I would describe as religious films, 10 Commandments and Greatest Story Ever Told, though I was delighted to play on the one hand Moses and the other John the Baptist, they came to me. I didn't make them happen. Ben-Hur is widely regarded as a religious film, but I think that's a pretty loose. It's really a melodrama whose high point is a chariot race. And though Christ is a significant figure, he's never seen on the screen, it's true that the protagonist, a passionately revolutionary Jew, is converted to Christianity at the end. But to the extent that qualifies it as I'd call it a melodrama with religious overtones.
Another one of your very popular roles was that of Michelangelo, the painter of the Sistine Chapel. Are you going to be visiting the chapel itself on this trip?
I hope very much to. I'm trying to arrange through the Vatican to get a private look at my handiwork and also to see what has been done to it. I know there's been very serious, fierce controversy in the art world over whether the extensive and painstaking and expensive restorations of the ceiling reveal what Michelangelo first put in that plaster or reveal a clumsy distortion of his intention. I remember when we shot the film, they had some scaffolding up in the Sistine, and I was up in the scaffolding, and certainly the plaster was in bad condition. There were cracks you could put your fingers in. Fresco is not the most stable medium in the world, though Michelangelo managed to make his last longer than Leonardo da Vinci's. And of course, we didn't shoot in the Sistine. We had permission to do so, but we could then only have shot the completed ceiling covered by centuries of grime. And so we built a full-scale replica at De Laurentiis Studios, exactly the dimensions of the original Sistine, and put on it. There was a controversy as to whether we should have artists copy the panels, and there was many artists volunteered to do this, some of them very prominent. But Carol Reed, who directed the film, said, for many, many people in the world, millions of people, this will be their only chance to see the Sistine ceiling. He said, a movie is a photograph anyway. He said, let us photograph the original ceiling, which they did, which is quite difficult because, of course, it's curved rondelles and arches, and Michelangelo did the drawings to disguise those curves so it appears from the floor to be flat. And they made full-scale color enlargements, photographs of them, altered the colors as carefully and knowledgeably as they were able to do, which was very knowledgeably, and put them up there in the full set that we made. Then they covered them with rubber to protect them, then put plaster on that, painted the plaster blue with gold stars in it, which was the way the ceiling looked when before Michelangelo decorated it. Julius II didn't like it that way. And so we did scenes in that. Then as we worked, we would spread fresh plaster. As you probably know, that's how frescoes is done. You paint in damp plaster. And we could continue, and when it was supposed to be finished in a given section, which is how he painted it, piece by piece, we'd take everything off down to the original photographs, and those indeed were. So the movie shows the real Sistine.
Jumping from Rome to Los Angeles, you greeted the Pope when he arrived there. How did that come about, your being the official greeter for the Screen Actors Guild itself?
No, I was, that's an exaggeration. I was proud to be one of, maybe some 25 or 30 people from the film community to whom the Pope spoke for 15 minutes. And then he did greet me and some others. But I suspect, unless he'd been told about how I'd painted his ceiling, that was a random choice, or perhaps because I'm taller than most of them. But it was a very moving experience. The film community is not noted for its religious orientation, let alone for its Catholic orientation. And everyone there was visibly struck by the chemistry of His Holiness. And what he said as well. It was an extraordinary morning.
He did talk about keeping high moral standards in terms of entertainment. How do you manage to do that in a town like Hollywood where, again, as you say, it's not known for its high moral standards?
I didn't say that, but you're quite right. With difficulty. The conflict His Holiness was addressing, I think, is not so much the standards of behavior of the individuals in their private lives, the film community as a community of human beings, but rather the far more significant influence of the films we make. As Lenin said in 1927, with great prescience, film is the most powerful tool ever put in the hands of man to shape the world and the opinions of the people in it, and His Holiness, of course, understood that very well. And that's what he was talking about. The conflict there is between the clear necessity of recognizing this power of film and using it responsibly, and something we value very highly in the West, which is freedom of speech, the creative freedom of the artist to make his artistic statement as he chooses is something very, very valuable in the world. Just about as valuable as the necessity to speak with some sense of moral weight and responsibility. And these two principles often abrade against each other. But that's one of the complications of living in a free society. We are, all of us, constantly, from His Holiness on down and out, dealing with this.